Growing up, my family spent a lot of time camping, hiking, doing basically anything and everything we could outdoors. We did this because, one, it was a really cheap family vacation, and two, we just really loved the great outdoors. Now, if there's one thing you need to know about my family, it's that we are a slightly competitive group of people. And what I mean by this is that we don't compete in the run-of-the-mill, normal competitions that people regularly have, such as board games, video games, and anything and everything athletic. Because let's just be real, that's a given. Now, in my family, we have unique competitions. And for example, at the dinner table, we would regularly race to see who could eat their food the fastest. Not at all a choking hazard. We would also race to see who could clean the most meat off of their bones every single time we ate hot wings. I've come to realize that's kind of gross, but in case you were wondering, I always won. We would also compete to see who could come up with the wittiest, most sarcastic retorts possible. I say all of this to tell you that when I say every time we would go hiking, there was without a doubt an unspoken race taking place. Because in all honesty, who doesn't want to be up front racing through the trails, clearing all of the freshly woven spider webs with their face? My siblings and I are not only competitive, but we are also adventurous. We loved going hiking. But what we loved even more was finding a stray path. There was something so exciting about going down a path that most people didn't take, much less know about. We spent so much time in the woods that we felt pretty comfortable there. And our parents would let us run ahead, getting just slightly out of their vision. In smaller areas, they would allow us to test our limits and abilities. I remember one time we were hiking with my dad and my grandparents, and they were hiking on the main trail, and we decided to follow a stray path, and so we followed it all the way down until we hit a dead end. And so, like normal people, we turned around, but of course, on the way back, we found another stray path, and so we followed that, and then another one, and another one, and another one, until we came to the final dead end. We turned around to head back to the main trail, and that was when we realized we had no idea where we were. When we were younger, our dad would tell us if we ever got lost in the woods, we needed to stop what we were doing, find a big tree, and hold on to it until he came and found us. AKA, if you find yourself lost, don't get loster. So naturally, my siblings and I did the exact opposite. You see, we argued with each other, we disagreed on what course of action to take next, and we blamed each other for getting lost. When we finally came to a decision of what we should do, we attempted to head back. We walked in what felt like circles for hours, convinced that we were going to be lost in the woods forever. My name is Erica Peel, and I am the Director of Student Ministries here at Christ Church. And as one who regularly takes your students hiking, if this doesn't give you the utmost confidence in my abilities as a leader, I'm really not sure what would. Today we are continuing on with our Easter series as we look into the story of two disciples who are on the road to Emmaus. Two people who are on a path that they have taken countless times, but yet they are still lost. At this point, Jesus has only been dead for 3 days. This is the same day that the women had gone up to the tomb early in the morning and came back making a claim that no one believed, that Jesus was no longer dead. This is the same day that Peter and John rushed up to the tomb and made the same discovery. Jesus' body was missing, and there was nothing in the tomb but strips of linen. In our story today, we have these two men who are returning home from Jerusalem after the Passover celebration. As they were walking along what we presume is a Roman road, which is made up of stones, gravel, and pebbles, they're talking about everything that had just unfolded with Jesus. As they are talking, a man joins them and begins walking with them. So the road to Emmaus was a well-traveled road. And at this time, it wasn't uncommon for people to walk alongside with other people. And given that the cell phone reception was so horrible back then, people were much more open to walking and talking with strangers. Now, if Emmaus is where we believe it is, then these men were most likely walking northwest, which means they would have been walking directly into the sun as it was beginning to set. All of us have experienced the blinding pain of looking into the sun as it sets. And even with the help of sunglasses or visors, it causes us to squint. Our eyes burn, our eyes tear up, and we are blinded from the pain. Could it be that the sun prevented these men from realizing that the man who was walking next to them was Jesus? While we may never know, we do know that the scripture says that God kept these men from recognizing Jesus. After walking silently along, Jesus finally speaks up and he asks these men, "What are you talking about so intensely?" And the men stop and look back at Jesus somewhat in shock and in sadness. And they say, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who has no idea what is going on." While Jesus' crucifixion had only just happened, it would have been a well-known event. It would have been a main headliner in the newspaper. And yet, here's this man asking what these two men are talking about, as if there was anything else to possibly discuss. The men then went on to explain that a man named Jesus, who was a prophet that performed powerful miracles and was a mighty teacher, had just been handed over by the religious leaders and chief priests, and they had had him crucified. These men were hurting. They were still processing everything that had just happened. And here they were having to relive the entire experience by relaying the events to this clueless man. They went on to say that they believed Jesus was the one who was going to save them, and not just them, but all of Israel. And to top it off, some women from the group had gone to the tomb early that morning, and they came back saying that Jesus' body was missing. And not only that, but they had been visited by two angels who made a claim that Jesus had risen. Some men from the group had run up to the tomb to find the same thing, an empty tomb. What's admirable about these two men is that even though they were leaving Jerusalem out of fear and out of confusion, they still spoke of Jesus despite the danger. Not only did they speak his name, but they did so in a reverent way. To claim to have known Jesus, to state that they believed he was going to be the one to save them from the reigning government, and to make a claim that they knew people that believed he had risen. These were all incredibly risky statements. Making these kinds of bold claims was life or death. These leaders had gone so far as to unjustly kill Jesus that anyone who chose to follow him faced the same death. In response, Jesus called these men foolish. Foolish for not trusting what the prophets wrote in the scriptures, because it was clearly predicted that the Messiah would first have to suffer before he came into his glory. From there, he continued to walk them through the scriptures and explain how they corresponded with Jesus and in his death. You see, the disciples knew the scriptures well, but they didn't know the scriptures. We see Jesus challenging them, challenging us. Are we going to choose to trust the scriptures? Are we going to choose to trust the truth even when the world is adamantly raging against it? are we going to choose to trust the disciples? It's moments like these when we come into a fork in the road and we have a decision to make. Are we going to walk down the trail that is clearly beaten down, traveled by others, and void of all spider webs? Are we going to choose to take the stray path, the path of the unknown, the path that God has called us to take? We've been following along this journey with these two men, but what do we really know about them? We know that they are common men. They were not well known, and they were not in Jesus' inner circle. They were most likely second-tier disciples. We know that they had lost hope, which is evident by them leaving Jerusalem when the rest of the disciples chose to remain together. We know that they had lost hope. They felt a spiritual desertion with the loss of Jesus. This man was supposed to save them, and suddenly he was gone. And not only that, but now their own lives were at stake. We know that these men had not lost a desire. We see that in the way that they speak of Jesus. The fact that they still lovingly and willingly spoke about him in a reverent way. We know that they had false expectations of Jesus. They wanted Jesus to be something he was not. They believed that Jesus had come for social reform to save them from the government and to be the new reigning king in Israel. But that's not why he came. We know that they did not yet understand the reason for the cross. And we see that in the confusion, in the loss, in the despair, in them walking away as if the war had been lost. The reality is that they couldn't understand the reason for the cross until they first died to their own expectations of Jesus. We are these men. We are the common people. We are the ones who lose hope. We are the ones who allow our joy to be stolen. We are the ones who have false expectations of Jesus. We are the ones who try to manipulate his gospel to fit our narrative, our desires, our wills. And because of that, many of us still do not yet understand the reason for the cross. Now the disciples and Jesus were close to Emmaus, and it appeared as if Jesus was going to keep on walking. And so these men begged Jesus to stay and eat with him. And so he did. When they sat down to eat, Jesus took the bread and he broke it and he blessed it. When he broke it and gave it to the men, their eyes were opened. And they realized who Jesus was. And in that moment, Jesus disappeared. And the men looked at each other and they were like, how could we not have known? How could we have not known that the man we walked with, the man who was speaking of the scriptures and talking and teaching us, was Jesus? What is it about the broken bread that reveals the truth? What is it about spending time with Jesus and the scriptures that opens our eyes to things that we cannot understand on our own? Jesus broke bread with the men, and in that moment, their eyes and their hearts were opened. It's hard to find truth when we are not actively seeking and searching for God. It's like playing a game of Marco Polo and hoping that by chance we're going to run into the thing that we have been searching for. These men spent time with Jesus. They had heard him speak countless times. They knew exactly what the scripture said, and yet they were still blind to who he was. Because it's not enough to simply claim to know Jesus. Because if we only claim to know him but never actually take the time to get to know him, our eyes will never be open to the truth. Just because we read the word, or we attend church, or we participate in a Bible study, does not mean that we know Jesus. For the only way to get to know Jesus is by surrendering ourselves to him. And in order to surrender ourselves to him, we must first die to our own desires and die to our own expectations of Jesus. The reality is we are all susceptible of getting lost. In fact, we can look and act as if we are doing all the right things. We can check off all the boxes of what a good Christian does. And you know what? Social media aids in making a really good case for what a fake Christian looks like. But the reality is, being lost in our faith doesn't look like someone who is lost out in the middle of the woods. Being lost in our faith can look like someone who's sitting in a pew and attends every single Sunday service. Being lost in our faith can look like a leader who leads a Bible study every single week. Being lost in our faith can look like a leader in the church. Being lost in our faith can look like someone who has never outwardly struggled with anything a day in their lives. So then what do we do when we are lost in our faith? Here are four things to do when you are lost in your faith. Number one, we need to trust the map. Hold tight to the scriptures when you are lost. Seek the word for wisdom, for discernment, for guidance. The men knew the scriptures well, and yet, when they were lost, when they were hurting, they forgot to turn back to the truth. And so what does Jesus do? He turns them back to scripture. Number two, when we are lost, we need to stick together. It's a lot easier to be found when you stick together. But the reality is, it's a lot harder to get lost when you stick together. Jesus did not create us to live our lives in isolation. He created us to be in fellowship with one another. So that in moments like these, when we are lost, when we are hurting, we have someone to lean onto. Number three, when we are lost, we need to ask for directions. Over the years, I've come to find that I'm a rather proud kind of person. And what I mean by this is when a store has this insane idea to rearrange their entire store so that the items that I have come to know very well are suddenly missing, and I'm seeking for this one item, instead of going and asking where they decided to move this item, I will run around the store like a crazy person with my head cut off and seeking out this item. But what I've come to realize is if I stop and ask a worker for help on where this item is, I usually find the item a lot faster. Seek God for counsel. And the chances are he might show you a shortcut or two. Or better yet, he might take you on a detour so that you can witness something so incredible you would have never seen had you not asked God for directions. And number four, when we are lost, we need to accept help when given. I'm sure at one point or another, we've all attempted to help someone else out. And when they don't want help, it's basically impossible to help anybody else out. And the same thing goes for Jesus. Not that he doesn't have the power and the authority to do so, but he wants us to choose him. He wants us to accept his help. And we need to be willing to accept his help when he is reaching out to do so. We need to accept the help of the people that he has placed into our lives. Within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. These men had traveled all day. They were exhausted after an emotional, tiring, painful weekend. They sat down to eat. Jesus breaks the bread and drops this humongous bomb on them and then just leaves. And they know they need to go out and tell the disciples what had just happened, and yet they choose to remain and finish their meal before they leave. So when they do make the trip and they arrive in Jerusalem, they find the 11 disciples and many others who had joined them in the room. And the disciples are excited and they say, "Peter just saw Jesus. He really is risen." And these men get excited. They're like, "We did too. We were walking along the road with him and we had no idea." And then all of a sudden he breaks the bread and our eyes are open and we realize who he is. Jesus had just risen from the dead. And one of the first things he does is he goes out and finds these two men. These men who had severed themselves from the Christian community and were left feeling disillusioned and afraid. Jesus sought out these men. Jesus walked with them. These men who were lost. These men who were hurting. These men who were not in Jesus' inner circle, and yet he deemed them worthy. He deemed them worthy to seek out and to save. When my brother, sister, and I were lost out in the woods, it felt like it had been hours, when in reality, it was probably only 20, 25 minutes before we finally found our way back to the main trail. In fact, it hadn't been that long that my dad hadn't even begun to panic, so he hadn't yet sent out a search crew. In fact, if we hadn't told him we were lost at all, he might not have never known. These two men, on the other hand, they were traveling down a well-worn trail, one they had taken many times before, and yet they were still lost. And instead of hugging a tree in hope of someone to come and find them, they were walking in search of something familiar to turn towards. But you see, Jesus didn't wait for them to realize that they were lost. He went out and he found them because he already knew. We are these men. We are the lost. We are the ones that Jesus seeks. I'm privileged to speak into the lives of our students. And after COVID, our students have found themselves hurting and lost and seeking. Our kids need a group of people to walk with, a group of people to lean on in times of trouble. They need people to grow with them. And at Christ Church Teens, we provide a family for this specific purpose. We not only focus on connecting them with Jesus Christ, but equipping them with the tools that they need to grow in their faith. Each one of us are on our own journeys. Every day we are making a choice to follow the main trail or to veer off on the stray path. And several of our students today have made a decision to walk down the path less traveled. They've made a decision to walk with Jesus, and today they want to make a public declaration to you, their faith community. I would like to welcome them up as we officially confirm our students in their faith.